This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. And, link to the server is down. That's not a good thing. And on the line with us, hopefully, is Vicki Ward.
Yes.
Hey, Vicki, you can hear me?
Hello.
Oh, great. Okay, our phone system just crashed, but you got through in the process. Editor-in-large at Huffington Post, author of the new book, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption. VickiWard.com, V-I-C-K-Y-W-A-R-D.com is the website, and people can tweet you at Vicki P.J. Ward. And Vicki, tell us about the book, Kushner, Inc. Is this about Jared's father and him, or is this about Jared and his wife? I'm sorry, I haven't had an opportunity to read it or even see it yet.
So it's the extraordinary story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. And it's really the story of two people who are not what I think we all hoped they'd be, not what they seemed. The real story, Jared and Ivanka, unfortunately, are not the moral center of this administration, which is what a lot of people hoped at the outset. They're not the moderating influence.
Well, this is how the media characterized them. They used to be Democrats. They're reasonable people. They're young. They're attractive.
Right.
Isn't this sweet? They'll moderate crazy old Donald. It's not the case, huh?
Right, and I think that the book shows that actually these two, you mentioned Jared's father, Charlie, that these two, because of their backgrounds and because of the culture that they come from, are very entitled and very disdainful of rules, including the rule of law. They really believe that rules are for other people. And this has created all sorts of problems, actually, just on a small level in the working environment of the White House, because, most people go into government for public service, and they have to divest of all their assets, stocks and shares, of everything they have to avoid conflict of interest. Jared and Ivanka really haven't divested at all. It's as if, that they're in, rules don't matter for them. This has all sorts of really serious ramifications. It affects, the way they've conducted themselves in domestic policy and in foreign policy. And I think the book makes the argument that it's really dangerous for this country.
So how did this whole myth of Javanka, of Jared and Ivanka being, these wonderful, helpful people. How did this evolve? Where did this come from? Was this an intentional thing? Was this like, they hired a PR firm to push this out into the media sphere? Or it was this just wishful thinking on the part of, all of us? Or, I mean, what?
No, so it's really interesting. So Jared and Ivanka are very similar people. And both of them sort of consider public relations number one priority. Ivanka once said, perception is much more important than reality. She actually wrote that in one of her books. And, both of them, for I say in the book, have been sort of programmed themselves for different reasons to sort of appear as the far more sort of sophisticated, shinier, glossier version of their respective fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Jared's entire adult life, his mission has been to avenge what happened to his father, who went to jail in 2005.
At the hands of Chris Christie.
Yes, and to rehabilitate the Kushner family name. And I say in the book there was actually a really considered three-point plan that was cooked up by the public relations guru, Harold Rubinstein, that, the Kushners had to sell up out of New Jersey and buy a trophy building in New York. That was part one. Part two was to buy a media outlet so they could control their image. And the third was for Jared to date someone prominent. And,
I remember when this was like a couple of years ago, this story first broke that the reason Jared married Ivanka was because that was his his ticket back into respectability. And the reason he bought, was it the New York Observer, this newspaper?
Yeah. The Observer was sort of put him in the social orbit to meet Ivanka. But the point is that I think that these two are, have been programmed to focus on their image. And they are the ones that have been very busy putting out this sort of myth, this surface idea that they are the adults in the room. And I think the book really shows how they're just not what they seem, right. That they are very, very transactional.
We're talking with Vicki Ward. Her new book that she just referred to is Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption. VickiWard.com is the website. And of course, the book is available today wherever you get your books. Vicki, is all of this a little more sophisticated or friendly for the New York Times way of saying that basically Jared and Ivanka are grifters?
Yeah, that was you put it. You got it right.
And if so, that they both learned it from their fathers.
That would also be correct. But I think what's sort of more important is the ramifications for that once you go into government. I mean, look, you know, Jared, when he worked for his father in the family's real estate firm, and my last book was about the world of New York real estate, so I know this subject area very, very well. Mm-hmm. He developed a reputation for being an imperious delegator who didn't really know the details of anything. You know, he was a bit of a bully and very rude to subordinates, but not to anyone important. Now, not knowing the details doesn't really matter when you're running, your father's business that you're going to inherit. But it really matters when you go into the White House and then suddenly you haven't filled out a security clearance form correctly, and suddenly, there's a FBI investigation led by James Comey looking at Russian collusion, and Jared hasn't mentioned on his form that he met with a senior Russian diplomat and a Kremlin connected banker during the transition. And so Jared, and I say this in the book, is the one who pushes Trump to fire James Comey at exactly the same time that the media suddenly learns of all these very, very serious omissions from his security clearance form. And Jared, who normally sort of whispers privately in Trump's ear, on this occasion had a stand-up row in front of people and in front of the president with Steve Bannon and made a three-pronged argument to Trump that he must fire James Comey. He said, number one, the FBI doesn't like Comey. Number two, the Democrats don't like Comey. And three, the base will love it if you fire him. There are lots of people who disagree with
Jared. This is a purely political argument for firing the head of the FBI?
Right. No, it was perceived as an effort to save himself.
Because Comey was looking into Jared Kushner too.
It's a felony not to fill out a security clearance form correctly.
Uh huh. But is Jared so short-sighted that he thought that he's committed a crime? The head of the FBI is looking into this crime. Get rid of the head of the FBI, and the criminal investigation is going to go away. I mean, if that was his logical thought process, that seems like the thought process of a pre-teenager.
Right, but these two people, Jared and Ivanka, you have to think of them a bit like Inspector Clouseau. Everyone else can see the sort of bumbling incompetence around the White House, but they can't see it themselves.
So you're the little boy who's saying the emperor has no clothes here. I mean,
right.
To use that,
yes.
Or little girl, as the case may be.
That is exactly correct. I mean, the next thing he did isn't an obvious move for people of normal judgment. you know, he's busy having all these meetings with investors of companies that he hasn't actually divested from. In one case, he hadn't even disclosed it at that, disclosed that he still had an investment. And he's the one who pushes for the White House logs to be closed. Remember the spring?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an outrage. I mean, at the time,
These are the visitor logs.
Yeah, the visitor
logs. This is how we find out who's hanging out with the White House, with people in the White House.
The American public is entitled to know what's happening at the White House.
Yes.
They are entitled to know who's going in. And at the time, the official word was that the logs were closed for security reasons. Mm. But actually, Trump, he didn't like the backlash in the media. And he turned to Sean Spicer, who was then the press secretary, and said, who has closed the logs and why? And, Reince Priebus, Steve Bannon, everyone around, they all suspected, actually, they knew it was Jared, who was conducting all this business because his father had a serious financial problem. He had a building, this trophy building in New York, was bleeding financially, and he desperately needed foreign investment. Mm. So, of course Jared didn't want the public knowing what was going on. But what happened was that a year later, John Kelly, a general with a general's mindset, actually opened the White House logs. So then we were able to see that actually, Jared had all these meetings with Lloyd Blankfein, who is an investor in a company he still had a stake in, Apollo and Citigroup, who then subsequently made loans to his family business, and John McCain, when he was sort of reading reports of this.
Vicky, can you stick around for about another 5-10 minutes here?
Of course.
This is an absolutely fascinating conversation, and I want to get into Jared Kushner's relationship with people in the Middle East, perhaps,
yeah,
particularly Mohammed bin Salman.
Yeah, of course.
We are talking with Vicky Ward. She is the author of the new book, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Vicky's website is VickyWard.com. You can tweet her at VickyPJWard. Stick around. And welcome back. Vicky, tell me about the relationship between Jared Kushner and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, and how that relationship, A, came about, B, why it's important to Jared, and C, how it's distorting American foreign and perhaps even domestic policy.
Yeah. So Jared, I think, looked at he was then the future Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and I think he thought he saw money is what he saw.
The Saudis or their other billionaire buddies in the Middle East might invest in Jared's building that was bleeding money.
Well, and subsidize his peace plan.
Uh-huh.
And also his private interest. MBS, on the other hand, I think saw Jared as a pawn.
As a useful idiot.
Who could be useful, and a conduit into the White House, and someone to be played. So MBS, very sort of cleverly, persuades Jared to persuade Trump to have the first official U.S. visit is not to, a country with shared democratic values like Britain or France, but to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where they have this summit that's meant to be all about cooperation in the Gulf, right? And days after it's over, MBS makes a complete mockery of the whole thing and of America by announcing a blockade on the neighboring country of Qatar, which is much, because he wanted its resources. Qatar is much richer than Saudi Arabia. And Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, and Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, were absolutely horrified. They'd had no idea of this.
Well, it's because the 5th or 6th Fleet or whatever is based in Qatar, isn't it?
Right. But what's even worse is Rex Tillerson knew that MBS would never have done this if he hadn't had a green light from Jared Kushner.
Mm.
And at the, and what's noticeable is the Qataris had recently turned the Kushners down. The Kushners had gone to them for money for their building. And so you just have to follow the money. I mean, it's really simple. So Jared Kushner, still thinking that MBS is going to pay for all the things he's ambitious on, then, you know, is, you know, blocks everyone, all the national, you know, everyone in the State Department, National Security Council, who should be sitting in on meetings, are all kept out while Jared has these private visits back and forth. And the next thing that happens is MBS, right after Jared's been visiting, MBS rounds up his, you know, his efforts to get money for out of Qatar haven't worked. So the next source of money, he goes to, he rounds up all these influential Saudis and imprisons them, if you remember,
mm-hmm.
Accusing them of corruption. Rex Tillerson said to Jared Kushner, Jared, have you noticed there are seven branches of the Saudi royal family. The only branch that MBS has not imprisoned are his own blood relatives. Don't you think it's statistically unlikely that they're not corrupt too? And Jared just didn't want to know.
Wow.
And the next thing he did was...
Vicky, hang on. We just got to take a bump here, and I've got to read on the commercial side. I'm reading a live commercial on the nonprofit side. It'll be a nonprofit pitch, but it's 1 minute. So we'll be back in 1 minute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. We're talking with Vicky Ward, VickyWard.com, and her new book, Kushner, Inc. Welcome back. We're talking with Vicky Ward. Her new book, Kushner, Inc., just came out today. Vicky P.J. Ward on Twitter, and VickyWard.com is the website. Vicky, just we just have a couple of minutes here before
right.
before the end of this block. Just to wrap this up, we were just talking about how Kushner goes over to Saudi Arabia. MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, has determined that he can play this guy. Kushner is desperately hoping he's going to get money both for his own personal efforts and to fund the Middle East peace deal from the Saudis. Immediately after he goes over, MBS arrests a whole bunch of people from six of the seven branches of, mm-hmm. of the Saudi royal family. The one branch that doesn't get busted is his own family. Kushner doesn't want to hear about that. The one piece that I have heard that I'm not hearing and I'm wondering about is it possible that the reason that MBS was able to specifically target individuals within Saudi Arabia for this shakedown and for and apparently in one case even beating one of these guys to death was
yep.
because Jared Kushner shared secret
yes.
U.S. intelligence with the prince?
That is in the book, and that was confirmed to me by several intelligence sources, yes.
So we have a guy, an advisor to the president of the United States in the White House, a grifter, who shared top secret U.S. intelligence with the leader of another country, who then used that to imprison and kill his own citizens. That seems to me pretty radical. I mean,
it's extraordinarily radical, and the story has another twist because I mean it's shocking.
Okay, we have just 1 minute left. Go for it.
So then that we get to spring of 2018, MBS comes to the United States, and the president asks him for $4 billion to help rebuild Syria. And MBS says, actually, I don't have enough money because he spent so much money on this very brutal war in Yemen, and oil prices were down. Jared Kushner, hearing this, starts to feel rather differently. The Qataris then come to town and say, we've got lots of money, but we need the blockade against us lifted. What happens? A company whose second biggest shareholder is the Qatari Investment Authority bails out the Kushner family building on an astonishing deal, a 99-year lease paid up front, which is unheard of. And the U.S., says it's no longer going to support the blockade on Qatar.
Wow.
Welcome to foreign policy dictated by the Kushner's personal financial needs.
This is astonishing. Vicky Ward, editor-in-large at Huffington Post, her new book, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, VickyWard.com. You can tweet her at Vicky P.J. Ward. Vicky, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for dropping by and for writing this book. It's absolutely brilliant. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment. It's 27, coming up on 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
This sounds like a hell of a book. We'll be back with your, you know, the news of the day and your calls right after this. Welcome back. It's 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Jay in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Joe, thanks for listening. Or Jay, excuse me. Thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you, sir.
What I'm really concerned about is, you know, Trump talking about the bikers and military and police that will have his back and will, you know, only take so much before doing something that'll be very bad. What makes me so nervous is the amount of, you know, military personnel. I'm a former Marine myself, and, you know, not a lot of people know the mission of a Marine Corps rifle squad is, you know, out of the training manual to locate, close with, and destroy all the enemy by fire maneuver or repel the enemy's assault by fire and close combat. So every time the president says so-and-so are the enemy of the people, the press is the enemy of the people, the, you know, Muslims hate us, like, he's essentially saying that's the enemy. All of the oath keepers and three percenters and the people that are going to, you know, defend his administration, you know, that's who you need to, you know, that's the mission, is to destroy the enemy.
Right.
That's like, nobody's talking about that, I feel
so,
like.
So, Jay, earlier we had
the hell out of me.
Yeah, I raised this question. I mean, Trump says he's got the army, the cops, and the bikers, and Steve King is openly calling for civil war, which is literally where neighbors kill neighbors, brothers kill brothers, you know, or sisters, or whatever it may be. And I asked the question, you know, is this possible, or is this just hyperbolic rhetoric? We had a woman call up, say that, she, you know, her husband flies Hornets in the, I believe, in the Army or the Air Force. You know, he's a bomber pilot, basically, a fighter pilot. And she said, no, the military, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, UCMJ, and the culture of the military is such that, you know, the brass will not go along with Trump if he says turn your guns on Americans, and the enlisted men will not go.
Tom, the thing you have to consider about that is, you know, there are principled people in the military. General Mattis was the one that I had my most faith and trust in. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, you know, under the UCMJ, you follow the orders of the officers appointed over you. And Donald Trump is the commander-in-chief. He's the highest, you know, military officer. And that's what is the most scary thing, is if he commands it, the military does it. There is no, like, that, and that's the worst part. And here's the other thing, and this is something that I think we're glossing over as well. When other medias or other people, like, we were able to do a lot of the things we did to, you know, Germany and to the Vietnamese and the Japanese, because we called them things like Krauts and Japs and, you know, these derogatory subhuman names. We're doing that right now when you have right-wing media calling people libtards and snowflakes. They are dehumanizing the people on the left because it'll be that much easier to kill them when you don't see them as fellow Americans.
Well, this is what they did in Rwanda. They called them cockroaches. They, you know, the Hutus called the Tutsis, or whichever way it was, cockroaches. And that was the phrase on, you know, and this was a genocide, a civil war that was promoted by talk radio in Rwanda. It was the talk radio host who went on the air that morning and said, go out there and kill your neighbors. And people did.
And we're doing it here, but we're not, it's not being talked about. When you hear people say, a libtard, which is incredibly offensive because you're essentially saying liberals are mentally deficient by using a combination of liberal and the incredibly derogatory term for a person with special intellectual disabilities.
Right.
By matching those two together, you are dehumanizing and otherizing that person so that you can kill them without feeling bad about what you're doing.
Wow.
That's what scares me, and we're not talking about that.
Yeah. And you know, I remember the way that the Vietnamese were demonized, and I remember my dad who joined the Army, during World War II, throughout probably most of his life, referring to Germans and Japanese by using those derogatory, because he fought them. You know, I mean, he that was the propaganda of that day. And to see, you know, classic wartime propaganda techniques being turned against the political enemies of the president, or not even enemies, just, you know, political people who disagree with the president's policies, is damn shocking. Jay, thank you for the call, and thank you for the insight into the military from your experience there.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. Dave in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Is this Dave who called saying that you didn't like the Green New Deal?
I did. I called yesterday. I appreciate you taking my call again today.
Sure.
The reason I called today was I got to thinking about our conversation yesterday, and I guess this kind of tags along with the last caller, but I think I was wrong, at least in some ways. And when I say that, calling the Green New Deal stupid like I did, the facts, I still can't find anywhere where it said, any research that says that we put out as much carbon emissions as China. I think that we could debate those, our sources or whatever.
What my point was, we put out 25% since the Industrial Revolution. An awful lot of was
That's
more than 30 years ago before China industrialized. So China may be producing less than,
point is, not to get off subject, but my point is that I think what I didn't recognize during a conversation yesterday is that you see it as a moral issue, whereas I see it as a practical issue. And I think that's the disconnect across the aisle a lot of times is, I have kids, and so I think you were saying we need to make this world safe for the future. And I appreciate that at least you're thinking about those things. Even if I don't believe them necessarily, I think I failed to recognize the moral stance that's being taken by Democrats on it. And the reason that I say that is, I often talk, when I said that I was conservative yesterday, the issue that would make me conservative is I'm against abortion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm often told that is.
You know, Dave, I know liberals who are opposed to abortion. A close friend of mine was the president of Democrats for Life. I mean, there are anti-abortion liberals.
But the reason I bring that up is people will say, oh, that's stupid, and I think that they don't see the moral side of my argument. I would never ask you to, I'm not asking you to agree with my side, but what I would ask the opposition to say is, just imagine I really do believe that that's a child being killed.
Sure.
I think that's where we have to meet in the middle on some of these issues.
And respect each other's point of views. Points of view. I agree with you, Dave. The one part of the Green New Deal that, frankly, I think is the part that's giving Sean Hannity and folks over at Fox News absolute fits, is the proposal that the government be the employer of last resort. In other words, that it's called guaranteed jobs, right? And this is something that we had in the United States from 1933 until somewhere in the late 1950s or early 1960s. As part of the original New Deal. And basically what Franklin Roosevelt said was, I don't want to give anybody welfare. We've got, a third of the country unemployed. You've got people literally experiencing starvation, near famine conditions in parts of the United States, horrible, horrible situations. But I don't want to give people welfare because I believe that demeans them. I would rather give them a job. And so we're going to create federal agencies. And John Maynard Keynes said, the famous economist who was advising Roosevelt, he said, if you hire one man to dig a hole and another man to fill the hole, as long as you're paying both of them, you're putting money into their pockets, and they will use that money in the marketplace to buy things, because these are people at the bottom of the economic ladder. They're going to spend 100% of the money they get, and the process of buying things will generate demand. And demand is what drives an economy. So if you can generate enough demand, entrepreneurs will start building businesses and starting factories and invent things to meet that demand. And that's exactly what happened, by the way. That put America back together. And so he said, okay, anybody who doesn't have a job and can't find a job, we're going to plant 1 million trees. We're going to do the Civilian Conservation Corps. we're going to dam the rivers in Tennessee, and we're going to build make electricity there and in Nevada with the Hoover Dam and the TVA, and we're going to provide jobs. We don't have Americans in rural areas don't have access to electricity, so we're going to create the Rural Electrification Administration, the REA, and we're going to put people to work, give them government jobs. And by creating these government jobs that rebuilt the infrastructure of America that we're literally to this day still using, not only did he get us out of the Great Depression, not only did he generate that aggregate demand that put the economy back on track, but the legacy of it is this extraordinary infrastructure all across the country that was built by Franklin Roosevelt and Dwight Eisenhower. And that's the goal of the Green New Deal, is to say, yes, we're going to do that same thing. And, you know, if somebody can't find it, if somebody's living in West Virginia and the mines are closed and nobody's investing in that area and you've got, you know, unemployment of 20-30% in these areas, then we're going to go into those areas as the government and pay people to solarize houses and you know, in the hopes that they will get a paycheck, which means that they'll start buying things locally in West Virginia, which means the businesses are going to want to move into West Virginia to supply that demand, and then those businesses will start hiring people, and it becomes generative just like it did in the 1950s. Am I making sense, Dave? That seems to be, to me, the biggest part that conservatives are objecting to is that government is guaranteeing jobs.
Two sides of that. First of all, on guaranteeing a job, that is certainly not the clip that you hear on TV. I'll say that. You hear AOC saying things like, we're going to provide money even if you don't want to work. You know,
She never said that, to the best of my knowledge.
Well,
what she said is we're going to offer jobs.
It may be
and the jobs would be, that is the whole Green New Deal, is we're going to offer green jobs.
And I guess from my point of view on the, by the way, I mentioned I'm an engineer. I would love that for, that would be perfect for my industry. I'm not disputing what you're saying in the plan. But from an ideological standpoint, I do think that if solar were, in some of the other ideas that you had, if solar were the better option, I do tend to think that the free market would have already sniffed it out a little bit harder than it has so far.
Well, the thing is, the market has been distorted. We subsidize the fossil fuel industry in the United States right now to the tune of $300 billion a year. And down in Florida, where there's a hell of a lot of sunlight, and keep in mind, Germany is the cloudiest country in Europe. It's cloudier than Michigan in Germany. And Michigan has lake effect. I grew up in Michigan. It's IFR 50% of the year. And Germany was able to pull this off. But down in Florida, Rick Scott got a law passed that makes it almost impossible for you to put solar on your house. You can't, if your house is connected to the electric grid, you can't solarize it.
Yeah, but that doesn't prove the cost benefit of
No, but it totally distorts the market.
Being done.
It totally distorts the market. So you can't say that the free market would provide these things, because the so-called free market has been distorted by these subsidies and by these laws.
I can certainly agree with that point.
Yeah.
We don't live in a pure free market.
Yeah, that's a fact. Dave, good talking with you. I got to run here, but thanks for the call back. I think a respectful conversation among people who have different fundamental perspectives is a really healthy thing, and I look forward to future conversations with you, Dave. Thank you very much. It's coming up on, it's 47 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls in just a few minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You are listening to the number one progressive radio show in America, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. And welcome back, Gene in Andover, Minnesota. Hey, Gene, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to take more of a optimistic view on the prospect of civil war.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
I don't think that the deep state, and by that I mean the conservative donor class, is going to allow Trump or King or anybody else to advocate something like that for long, because for the main point is it would be really bad for business.
That's an interesting point I hadn't considered. And you're right, the billionaire class does own the Republican Party.
Huh.
That's actually good news.
Pardon me?
That's good news.
Yeah. I kind of think they look at Trump like the Doberman that relieves himself on the Oriental rugs. Mm-hmm. They'll put up with it as long as it still has a function.
Yeah, as long as he can still bark and bite. And then the question is, you know, when he can no longer bark and bite, I mean, if he completely loses credibility with the American public because it comes out that he's been, you know, sucking up to Russia, for example, just because he wants to make hundreds of millions of dollars on a Trump Tower in Moscow, which is what Adam Schiff is now saying, you know, the congressman who's the head of the Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives. If that sinks in to the Fox News viewers, or if the transition that Fox News went through yesterday under new management, now it's being run by the son of Rupert Murdoch rather than Rupert Murdoch, if that means that Fox News isn't putting up with his BS anymore, then at that point the billionaires pull the plug and guess what? Mike Pence is the next president.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Fascinating. Gene, thank you. That's a brilliant thought, perspective. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind today?
I think I can help you explain the attacks on John McCain by the president.
Okay, go for it.
He knows he didn't have bone spurs. He knows that.
Right.
He knows John McCain was offered an early out but refused it.
Right.
So his cowardice, he can't allow into the media. So he has to attack a hero to justify his own take on his life. And he can't deal with that. He can't deal with his supporters thinking that he was a coward, that he was.
Yeah. Corporal bone spurs here.
And that's the long and the short of it. There's no other reason for attacking that man.
Well, you know, what Trump would say, and what, in fact, he did say in one of his tweets, was that John McCain was the guy. Trump wanted to kill Obamacare. He's trying to destroy every vestige, every piece of any accomplishment by America's first black president. That's his mission, right? He spent 8 years campaigning against Obama, saying this black guy in the White House isn't even an American and isn't even a Christian. He's a Muslim and he's from Kenya. That was his pitch, which is, you know, absolutely denigrating our first black president. And now he's trying to remove every bit of his legacy. And the last bit of that was Obamacare. And John McCain was the decisive vote in preventing the Republicans from destroying Obamacare.
Well, if you go back and look at the 2011 speech by President Obama, where he just totally took him apart in that correspondence
center. Oh, yeah. Louise and I were in the room when that happened. we were sitting just a ways away from Donald Trump, and we watched his face. And I'm looking back on it, I think that's the moment at which he decided that he was going to run for president and he was going to take down everything Obama did. Corky, thank you. Welcome back. Jeff in Ackworth, Georgia. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, how are you, sir?
I am great. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I was just basically filling in on the gentleman we spoke to earlier about as far as military. I myself am a former Marine, and then I went into the Army, combat veteran, Iraq, the whole nine yards, mm-hmm. left with the Purple Heart. When we do our oath of enlistment, it is an oath to the Constitution of the United States, not the President. So you have what's called lawful and unlawful orders. If a mission ever would to come out or an order to come out to do anything that would be against the Constitution of the United States, that would be an unlawful order, and the military would not do that. So, you know, I've been listening, you know, for the past, and I just want to let you guys know that there's, as far as Trump saying, I've got the bikers, I got the police and all that. It's just rhetoric.
So if Trump loses and doesn't want to leave the White House and the bikers come out and start provoking riots with, let's say, you know, in inner cities and in neighborhoods that are heavily people of color, and that devolves into riots, essentially, you know, people fighting back, trying to defend themselves. And then Trump goes to the military and says, we need to restore peace. You don't think that the military would say, okay, even though posse comitatus?
Well, the military would, but I assure you, I was a member in an outlaw motorcycle club, and I assure you, that's not going to happen with bikers. We got better things to do.
Okay.
And trust me, much less want to work with the police. So.
Yeah. Jeff, I hope you are right. I really hope you're right. And, you know, it's reassuring. Jeff, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your experience with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Maureen in Canada. Hey, Maureen, what's on your mind today?
Hey there.
Where in Canada are you?
Just near Ottawa.
Okay.
Lovely capital city.
Beautiful country. Yeah. Beautiful place. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on the call, and I really appreciate your show. And for everybody out there, donate, because this is important stuff.
Thank you.
And so there's so many things I want to say.
Well, we have 1 minute, Maureen, before the end of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I've been watching this Trump fiasco down there, and it scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Hedges says war is the thing that gives us meaning, and he talks about the Civil War in Sarajevo and how, you know, people turned against each other, and it can happen very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's scary, and people need to not vote for him in 2020.
Yeah.
The other thing is socialism. Please don't think of folks. Don't think of socialism as something that is bad. It's I got a lot of help from the government when I was young, for education, and I've been paying taxes ever since. My mother was very, very ill, and
so how does the word socialism? Pardon my interrupting, but we just have 20 seconds. How does the word socialism play in Canada, Maureen?
It doesn't.
In other words, nobody's objecting to it. It's okay to say that I'm a socialist in Canada?
I mean, people, you know, there's always sides of the coin that keep things balanced, right? Let's not spend too much money on this. We certainly value.
So this debate is not happening in Canada?
No.
Yeah, fascinating. Maureen, thanks for sharing that with us. And thank you for calling. I look forward to future conversations. Fascinating stuff. An amazing day. We'll be back with more tomorrow. And keep an eye on Fox News now that Rupert's no longer running it. And then they hired Donna Brazile. And now Donald Trump is starting to go, I'm not so happy with Fox News. I think things are getting real interesting all over the whole political spectrum. And now this book about the Kushners, Kushner Inc. Whew. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.